listening
to the CD Baby.
CD Baby.
CD Baby.
DIY
Musician.
Musician Podcast.
Hey there, and welcome to episode number 212 of the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast. My name is Kevin Bruner, and joining me is Chris Robley. Chris, how are you?
I'm good. I was realizing that we have seen each other in person 3 months in a row now. We were just in Nashville for Music Biz, where we recorded the last episode of this podcast together in the same room. And then we were in Spain the month before. And then the month before that, I was in Portland, Oregon. So
where are we meeting up next month?
You're going to have to come to the East Coast because I've used up all my tokens.
Oh, well, I'm going to France soon. Why don't you meet me in France?
Okay. Yeah, that's East-ish. Yeah.
Done and done. All right. I'll see you there. Meet me at the Eiffel Tower. That's a good spot.
Sounds great. But yeah, it was fun being in Nashville with you and adventuring, and finally went to the Bluebird Cafe.
Yeah, that was an interesting experience after having lived in Nashville for years and actually worked directly across the street from the Bluebird for a while. That trip I made with you is the first time I've ever been to the Bluebird. It's kind of like one of those musical meccas you need to go visit.
Yeah, I'm glad we did it. And I couldn't believe all the... I should have believed it because I heard about the hoopla in advance, you know, just how many people they cram into that room and the fact that there's lines out the door waiting for like potentially getting standby tickets. It's a to-do.
Yeah.
All for a little bar in a strip mall.
Yeah, it's not what people may expect, but yeah, it's definitely worth checking out. And if you are listening to this podcast and you come to Nashville in August for the DIY Musician Conference, August 24th through 26th, you too can go visit the Bluebird Cafe. And so you should do that. Come to the conference, hang with Chris and I, and go check out the Bluebird or other musical spots of note in Nashville, because there are many.
Of which there are, yeah, countless ones. But the Bluebird was cool, so do that.
You know, for me, it was a dual purpose trip. I went there for the first half of the week was CD Baby related, and then Small Town Poets, we showed up, we did some publicity and a whole bunch of stuff related to our release of our new record. And so that was very exciting. And I have been running a sprint, I think, for the last, I don't know, 4 weeks with the release of this album, just trying to keep up with everything and keep my life together.
2 years.
Yeah, 2 years, but... But the last 4 weeks have really been like run a little faster. So I haven't been sleeping much, but some interesting things have been happening. And, you know, for this episode of the podcast, we've got a lot of listener feedback and a lot of calls that have been piling up that we're going to get to, and some emails. We're going to get to that later on in the show. But instead of doing news and then a topic section today, since both Chris and I have new music we've released recently, and we've been trying a lot of things, we are going to talk about that and some of the things that we've been learning, some of the things we've been trying. I know when we were in Nashville, Chris, we were hanging out with the one and only Ted Goldthorpe, and he was just going on and on about how excited he was for us to be releasing music. And it's like, now let's see them put their money where their mouth is. I'm like, oh, great.
No pressure.
So,
we should just take this moment to remind Ted that we have day jobs.
Hey, that's no excuse. You got to suffer for your art.
Well, what I mean is time is limited. So,
yes,
you know, so you're promoting things at 2 a.m. when you can, you know, find a moment.
Yeah. Well, it's been a lot of late nights to just, I'm like, I've got to make it happen. If there's always someone else to email, there's always something else, you know, and all that. So for today's episode, we're going to be talking about promoting a new release, what Chris and I have been trying, what we've learned, and let's get to that now. All right. Well, we both have some new music that we've been releasing. Chris, you've got you've done a couple singles as of late, but you did one. It's been about a month back, I should say.
Yeah, I think it was at the end of April I put it out. And to maybe add some clarity for this discussion in advance, I'm about to put one out next Wednesday, which by the time this episode airs, I think it will already be out. So if I'm kind of asking questions about that one and talking about results, it's for the one I put out in April.
Okay, that makes sense. And my band, Small Town Poets, just released a new album called Say Hello. And, you know, if you've been listening to this podcast and you like the podcast, nothing would bring Chris and myself more joy than for you to go to Spotify and stream the tracks. Chris has a whole giant catalog there. You should follow Chris. You should follow Small Town Poets. Give our music a listen. You know, we'll put each listener, if we put each listener down for at least 1,000 streams, I think we'll be good, Chris.
Well, you know, you said nothing would bring us more joy than them streaming the music, but that's not true. What would bring me more joy is if you liked the music after you listened to it.
That's true, because sure, we could get
Let's go all the way to the end goal here.
That's right. Yes, because we could run some sort of podcast pyramid scheme where we get everybody to turn their computers on and then go outside and play basketball or something while their computer is streaming the album. But we want you to listen and love it, just like what we're all trying to get people to do. So you, Small Town Poets and Chris Robley, go check them out. And we're going to be talking about what we've been doing. So if you've been following us on social networks or on our email list, you'll also probably have seen some of the things that we'll be talking about. So where should we start, Chris? I mean, we've both been trying a lot of different things. What's kind of top of mind for you? Some of the things you've been trying, some of the things you've learned.
So we've talked about show.co, you know, quite a bit over the past year on this podcast, but I would start there because that popped up a few different times in my release promotions for the single I put out in April, which is called Collapsing Star. So the first thing, you know, like you've got your music done and you put it through your distributor, hopefully CD Baby. And then, you got to ask for the Spotify URI, which is the kind of identification code for that song before it's been made available on Spotify. So CD Baby got that to me and I went to show.co and I set up a pre-save campaign. So that was the first thing I did. And, I don't know if we need to get into what that is. We've talked about that quite a bit too, but,
it basically replaces the iTunes pre-sale. So it's the ability for your fans to pre-save your music on Spotify. So on day one, when the album drops, Spotify sees all these people adding it to their library and it juices their algorithm to say, hey, this is an album people are really wanting to see.
Yeah. So I set that up and then I said, you know, obviously I can share this as a Facebook post and I can send out an email, which I did. But I felt like I needed some other way to kind of keep putting it out there to just get it in front of people's faces a bunch of times. So the next thing I did was something I'd done for an earlier release. I took the album cover and I chopped it into 9 smaller squares and I shared them on Instagram over, I don't know, 4 or 5 days or something like that. And every time I did, I put these things that I was calling field notes, these just random observations or bits of essays from other writers or things that I'd said about the song that just tied into the content of the song to some degree. And then I just filled it with hashtags that had to do with space and stars and science and black holes and all the stuff that tied back to the song. So that was a way that I kept being able to get the pre-save thing out there without hopefully beating people over the head with it, because ultimately those 9 individual squares came together to form the full album cover.
Yeah. We did a pre-save campaign as well, and I didn't have as much time to set it up as I had hoped. But hey, it was a record. I think this is the first independent project I've released where I had CDs in hand more than a week in advance of the release date.
So you had CDs in advance, but you were setting up your pre-save at the last minute.
Well, I still, you know, I got it out there. The Spotify pre-save campaign, I think I had like 8 or 9 days leading up to it. And which was fine. You know, it's recommended that you have more, but it was fine. And it really was, I think I took the just beat him over the head approach. Because we had some press landing all that week leading up to the release. Now that, you know, release day, official release day is Friday, there's a, you know, the press typically comes out beforehand on that week. They're not going to, you know, launch a big article about an album on a Saturday. So a lot of the press comes out beforehand. So I was kind of just reinforcing a lot of the stuff that was happening with the, and then saying, go pre-save it. And, you know, one thing that's been interesting for us to see is that through things like a pre-save campaign, and we also did the iTunes pre-sale, and I even had CDs available for pre-sale on CD Baby, is that the makeup of our fans is still somewhat confusing to me. And as far as like where they buy their music, it's very, very fractured. And this is a problem that artists are having to face with every release. But so for starters, sold way more CDs on release week than expected. I knew we'd sell some, but the demand for that was far higher than I anticipated. And then just anecdotally, as we were leading up to the release day, like when we were doing that pre-save, I didn't include an Amazon link in a pre-save. But people were saying, oh, I got it on Amazon. I'm like, huh, that's interesting. A lot of our fans seem to be on Amazon. And then after the album came out, using some tools, it found that for us, the digital music services, this doesn't include CD sales, Spotify is number one, but not far behind it was iTunes. I mean, not, sorry, take that back.
Apple Music.
Spotify was number one, not far behind it was Apple Music. Then Amazon was number three, far ahead of iTunes. And we sold a decent amount of downloads on iTunes. So I'm kind of curious to see, you know, we don't have trending reports for Amazon Music. So I'm kind of curious to see what comes back from there. And so, yeah, it's just some of those things where, you know, trying to figure out how to communicate with your fans. We have a tool here at CD Baby called Here Now. You can get it from your dashboard, but basically it creates a landing page with links to all these services so you can drive your fans to one spot and they can go where they want to. I think that's becoming, you know, something that's increasingly important when you start promoting a release, to have a tool like that where you can use one link and send your fans wherever they want to go, because
it simplifies things greatly for you. It simplifies them for your audience, obviously. But then even beyond that, it helps you have further reach with your messaging, because then you don't have to, you know, kill whatever reach your Facebook might Facebook post might have with six links, when you can just put one, or you know, whatever the equivalent of that is. And if email programs are dampening your reach because you have more and more links, like, better to just have that one.
Yeah, so that's something that, you know, has been shown to be incredibly important. And for some artists, your makeup of your audience might be 90% Spotify. Or, you know, there's a lot of artists that's almost that, on like 90% SoundCloud. But I think it's really important, you know, to not make assumptions about where your fans are, because they might not be where you want them to be. And that's kind of what my takeaway has been, is that as I've been doing promotions and, you know, trying to do pre-saves on Spotify, and, you know, there's a lot of focus on Spotify because user activity creates more user activity by the platform recommending music to other users. And so ideally, like, if someone's going to stream it, I want them to stream it there, because then it kind of can amplify what's going on. But just having the realization that, wow, we've got a lot of people using Apple Music, we've got a lot of people still buying CDs, and this Amazon curveball, and what's going on there, and, you know, hoping Amazon starts allowing, you know, playlists and things like that for users to sort of amplify on behalf of the artist. I know Alexa has a lot to do with that as well.
Yeah. I mean, that leads me to an observation about my last release and a question about this next one. So you're saying, you know, don't assume everyone's on Spotify. Your fans are going to be spread out. And so I did the last time my Spotify pre-save campaign posed a question, and the pre-save button itself was going to answer that question. It was sort of like, what is, you know, what does this sound like? And I had some description that was supposed to pique your curiosity, and you'd be like, oh, I don't know, what does that sound like? So you press pre-save, and then at some future date, you'll be able to answer that question. But for someone who's not a Spotify user, that's kind of a meaningless, well, it's an entirely meaningless campaign. And I had people write me back when I sent an email saying, well, I'm not on Spotify, so what the heck? So now this time around, I'm thinking, well, there needs to be an immediate reward. So if I do a Spotify pre-save through show.co, it also needs to have an email sign up so that you can leave me your email and then go and hear like a SoundCloud link of that song. But I'm wondering, will that kill the energy that the song has on Spotify that first day if those people who have pre-saved it have already had immediate access to it?
And my response is possibly. I mean, I think what it comes down to as a trade-off is having, you know, a large amount of people go and pre-save that track and just the Spotify system seeing all these people pre-saved it, like, or saved it right on day one, more valuable than them actually going on day one and listening to it. Maybe they will still listen to it. You know, I think on the SoundCloud side, you know, a lot of people might pre-save it, not actually listen to the SoundCloud link. I don't know. It'd be interesting to try and see how many people actually listen to it on SoundCloud. The one thing though is that at show.co, it allows you to drop in marketing pixels. So you could go over to Facebook, get that little marketing pixel, drop it into show.co on the back end, and then everybody that pre-saved it on release day, you could launch a Facebook ad targeting those people to make sure they know to go listen to it.
There you go. Well, and also that whole situation is, I suppose, a little bit clearer for you guys, because you were getting people to pre-save the entire album, but their reward was to hear just one song, the SoundCloud player of one song. Whereas for me, if I'm releasing a single, that SoundCloud player is going to be the entire work.
Yeah. So, and
it makes way more sense, obviously, in your situation.
Yeah. I mean, we had that one song, the single that's been released to radio. We had that one they could hear, and that one hadn't been released in any form yet, you know, where we had a couple, single releases, you know, one in November and then one in February, tracks off the album, just, you know, singles to Spotify. And then those were already out there and people heard it. So we wanted a new track. And it's hard to say how many people listened to that from the pre-save, because we were using that track, that private link on SoundCloud a couple places. So ideally, we would have separated that out and just had one specifically that we were using just for the pre-save campaign, so I could measure how many people actually listen to it. My guess is that, you know, every time you have, you go through a layer, you lose people. So some of them didn't actually listen, but, you know, pixeling those people and doing some retargeting on release day is probably not a bad idea. At least, you know, they're highly interested fans.
Right.
Well, I've got what I'm calling a tale of two different local press experiences. So leading up to this release, I thought, you know, I got to practice what I preach. I'm going to reach out to some local press. And by local press, I mean like local press, and let them know about the release and try and craft an angle that I think is going to interest them.
And I would just want to jump in here and say, you're talking about almost the equivalent of neighborhood press. I mean, I know Camas is its own town, but compared to Portland or Seattle or something, this is a very, very small press, right?
Correct. Well, here, there was three people I reached out to. So I hope I don't lose anybody in this explanation, but there is the Portland, Oregon metro area, and there is the giant newspaper and press outlets, ones like the Oregonian. And then in, I actually live in Southwest Washington, where we have our similar paper, similar to the Oregonian. That's the big paper called the Columbian. We're not talking about those. So there's a county website where that just started recently called Clark County Today. And it was started by a very wealthy individual, and they attracted a lot of very professional press folks from the Portland and Vancouver area, from radio, from print, to start this new online publication. So that was one of them. I have no idea how big their actual reach is, but it looked like a professional website. It covers all of Southwest Washington. I said, why not? So that was one of them. The other one was more of a lifestyle magazine for the general region I live in. It's not specific to my city. I live in Camas, Washington, but it focuses on that area. And it's like a lifestyle magazine. So that was another one. The other one was the local, very much like the community newspaper, the Post Record for Camas Washougal. And in that is kind of reminds me of some of the newspapers I'd see at my distant relatives who lived in a small town outside of Louisville, Kentucky, on a farm. When we'd visit there, it would be a kick just to pick up the paper because it was like almost like gossip sections. So those are the three kind of presses. So I reached out to them thinking the last one I mentioned would be the one that would actually hit. And I was trying to put a local angle in it, like why they might be interested. I'm on a committee for the city of Camas. And so I kind of put that in there like, hey, I do this for the city, but I'm also a musician and Grammy nominated, blah, blah, blah. One of them hit me back instantly. The lifestyle magazine. He's like, oh, this is good. Let's set up an interview. And so I set up an interview with him. And then a couple of days later, that Clark County Today website hit me back. So we were talking about on the PR episode, like how to ruin a press opportunity episode, that sometimes you might have to guide the interview. Well, one of them, they called me up and they said hello. And they said, so tell me what's going on. Just like that. I'm like right now, like what I'm doing at work or like what the press thing was. And we talked for like 45 minutes. And I almost felt like I was talking to nobody because he seemed uninterested, clearly didn't have any idea of what we were doing. And I was just trying to figure out how to guide the interview so it makes sense, because I didn't think this person, I didn't know who it was. It felt like someone who got assigned the job and didn't care and wanted to
phoning.
Yeah, it was just like, okay, whatever. So, and then at the end, it got a little bit better, but I've left that going, oh my gosh. But then the other one showed up with a reporter, a cameraman, all this professional gear, and did this giant interview in my home studio, totally professional. And I was like, wow, in both these situations, you know, all I was expecting was them to write a blurb and link to the album. That's really what my intention was, just post the thing to the album. But then that ClarkCountyToday.com, you can read it online. If you search my name in Small Town Poets, it'll come up, I'm sure. Did this gigantic article and compiled a video of an interview and splicing our music. And I just couldn't believe what an amazing story they wrote. Very heartfelt. And like, it turned out the guy that was the reporter was a huge fan from back in the day. And I was just blown away. It was like this whole like idea of contacting them was just I should probably do this. I did it, the interview on Wednesday, and the article was up Friday on release day, and it was just enormous and such a nice feature. And then the other, go ahead.
The video looks great, and it's pretty long, right? It's maybe 6-7 minutes, something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot of interviews spliced with our music and some other videos.
Like, I couldn't believe they shot and edited it all in that amount of time as well.
I know, I couldn't either. So I was like, wow, you can't underestimate local press, because even if, I don't know how big of a reach their website has. Like I said, they're trying to be like a new news outlet for the region that's all digital, and they have some financial backing. So they are doing it right. But posting that online, nobody knows how many people read that website. And it was such a nice feature. People were just like, oh my gosh, that was crazy. That was a really cool feature. It was a really long article too. But then that other press outlet that I really had to guide along and felt like, oh my gosh, that's going to be a bad article. Like, I thought it was going to be bad because I felt like the person didn't know who we were. And my explanations, I felt like I was just spent so much time trying to provide context. I thought, oh, this is going to be all over the place. It actually ended up being a giant article that was decently written, not as good as the other one, but I was just shocked at what good press coverage we got. So the bottom line was I left that feeling like, you know, don't underestimate local press. Sometimes they're going to, you know, you're going to have to guide them along. Like we've said, they might not be as professional, but other times, you know, it might just make you look really good. And in a world where we have everyone looking at stuff online, they don't know that that website isn't the major newspaper from our region. It looks like it could be. And so those could be some easy press opportunities for you that make you, you know, stand out.
Yeah, I feel like you've been aware of that opportunity, or maybe you've even taken advantage of it to smaller degrees in the past, because I feel like you've talked about it for years. And so it's cool that you did it for this release and it really paid off.
Yeah. Now, I don't know if anyone actually did anything because of it. That's the one thing where you're like, okay.
Well, it's one of those things. It's like getting a good picture from your show, like, and putting it on Instagram. Like, what's it worth? Maybe nothing in terms of like immediate ROI or CD sales or something, but it's an impression.
Yep. It's true. I mean,
you're creating a professional impression that other people are interested in you.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. And that's what I thought was the best takeaway, is like, sometimes that online sort of validation and the ability to tell a story that people are interested in what you're doing has more value than whether or not people saw the article and actually clicked through.
Social proof.
There you go. So that was a big thing that I, you know, was kind of coming down to the wire last minute. I thought, oh, I need to do this because I tell people to do it and I should do it too. And it actually was far easier than I expected and paid off. So don't disregard those people. And also, I think the other takeaway is that just like the music business is shifting, so is the press community. So some of the things, the outlets that you thought were the powerhouse outlets may or may not be still. And there may be some new outlets emerging that you haven't really paid much attention to that more people are consuming through these days.
Well, I know another thing that both of us did to promote our releases, you guys made a kind of like an in-studio music video sort of thing, and I made a lyric video, and it was the first time I'd done any kind of like, it's pretty crude animation in terms of the techniques I was using, but I really like how it came out and the visual effect, so I made a video that shows us a star just slowly shrinking to nothingness, and then it's a lyric video, so you see the words as well. And I created a show.co campaign for that as well, so that instead of sending people to YouTube, where they could be distracted by 20 other videos or whatever, I embedded the YouTube player on a show.co page, which looked really nice, and it has calls to action, so I can get people to subscribe on YouTube or follow me on Facebook or subscribe to my email list, a bunch of stuff like that. And anyways, I shared that show.co campaign that features the video on Facebook and in my email newsletter before I shared, before I'd posted the video to Facebook, where it would live kind of as native content, because I wanted everyone to go to show.co first.
Yeah, I did a similar thing with our video just yesterday. It had been online, but we hadn't really promoted it. We were waiting till after the initial phase of a release announcement and that kind of blitz was done, holding that piece of content back to have something to talk about. And I as well used a show.co landing page for the video, and it was so much better. It was funny. I was sitting there going, all right, I need to promote this video. Okay, where am I going to send people? Because I don't like sending people to YouTube just to see one video, because we don't really have a channel. We have a channel, but we don't do a lot with it. We don't use it like YouTube says you should, just because that's not where our focus is. And I was going to put it directly to Facebook because it performs better on Facebook that way, but I still didn't want to send people to a place where they're just going to get distracted. So I'm like, oh, duh, of course, show.co. We've got the perfect thing for this. And so dropped it in and, you know, linked to it from the email that we sent out. and it performed really well. I think that putting a video in that clean environment where they land there, all they have to do is click play, there's no just visual distraction, really helps launching a video.
Yeah, and I mean, in terms of sharing that on Facebook, for me, I paid to get that link out there because obviously it's an external link and Facebook doesn't like that. So I did have to pay more to promote that on Facebook than I did when I actually finally got around to posting the video, uploading the video as native content and sharing that because Facebook likes that a whole bunch more. But still getting that initial kind of energy of viewers who are seeing it in its sort of ideal environment, I thought went a long way for just creating a certain mood. And I heard like a lot of people writing back being like, wow, like beautiful song, beautiful video, so well done. Like I felt like there was an emotional response that was maybe heightened because they were viewing it in that environment we're talking about without the distraction. And it's a very slow paced, like intentionally slow paced video. So giving it the space on the screen and all that stuff to just be what it is, I think worked really well for me.
Yeah, when I dropped our video in to the show.co page and built it out and put a nice photo in the background, it was pretty striking when, you know, like I previewed the page, how much we see video these days with an enormous amount of distraction around them, whether it's on YouTube or even on Facebook, that seeing a video just presented in a nice, clean way with a very specific call to action. It was like, wow, it just seemed, I wanted to push the play button. So I think that's something to consider.
I mean, I might be describing the obvious here, but a lot of times if I'm watching a video on YouTube in the sort of smaller, not a full screen view where there's a whole bunch of suggested videos off to the right, it's distracting on a lot of levels. It's visually distracting, but then my mind starts racing in this way where I'm like, oh, that video looks interesting. That looks good too. And that suddenly I'm making a to-do list and cataloging things in my mind rather than actually focusing on the content in front of me, which could be great. It could be exactly what I'm looking for. And I'm still distracted. So
yeah,
put the videos in show, get rid of all that.
Yeah. Did you use a service to make that lyric video?
No, I made it myself. I pretty much make all my lyric videos myself. Yes, I do. I make all of them myself. I just used Final Cut Pro and it took forever because it's a slow animation.
Yes, that sounds agonizing.
And then it's funny, I put all this work into this thing that is an intentionally boring video. Like, I don't mean boring in that way. It's supposed to slow you down.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be just this grueling march through time.
It's artistic.
And yeah, but it's like, it's the exact type of thing that everyone now would tell you not to do. It's like, your video has to be captivating in the first 2 seconds and it's got to, you know, I'm like, well, whatever. So then I spent all this time making this thing that is the least likely to be shared. But hey, I would say when it's viewed in its an ideal environment by the people that I was trying to reach, they responded more to this video than to other ones I've done that are more flashy.
Well, and that's an important distinction. And as long as you know what you're going for and you feel like you attain those goals, then that's what you should do.
Yeah.
I've got a couple more items that I'll try and breeze through a little quicker. One is that I know both you and I have been trying some of those song placement services online. I won't go into detail about them now just because the jury is still out on some of them, but we're talking about legit things, not like, hey, get 100,000 followers and that kind of stuff. I would never touch that stuff. But we're trying some of those online services with mixed results and we'll have to report back, but that's something I've been trying. It's usually fairly affordable, the ones that are out there, and you know, it might help. So that's something I've been trying. I've also been doing a lot of individual pitching myself to playlists. I won't tell you the names because doing some of the work is part of the process, but there's plenty of playlist companies out there, independent playlist companies that have brands on Spotify that aren't the Spotify brand, that have websites and have open submission forms. And I've been doing that. I was up till probably almost 1 o'clock last night doing that. And then I've been reaching out to some playlist curators that I've been finding on Facebook. And so far that has yielded zero results. Not even a response.
Well, in these automated submission portals or services that you're mentioning, I also, from my last release, submitted to, I don't know, whatever the equivalent of like $20 worth was, maybe it was 10 or 12 different blogs, with zero results. And then I heard from our friend Michael Warner, who runs playlisting service. He's like, well, dude, your song was 7 minutes long, like more than 7 minutes long. So like, don't take it so personally. Like that's like rule number one of not getting onto playlists is make a long song. So I think, you know, thinking about what genre you're working in, and certainly giving these services enough time, like not submitting your song on the day of the release, because at that point it's kind of too late. But yeah, why not throw 10 or 20 bucks into this thing and just try it, is sort of my attitude.
The one thing that I've uncovered as a true need and problem for musicians in this new environment of like trying to use a service to pitch individual tracks to curators. And some of them I will highlight aren't just Spotify playlists. One of the services out there will pitch it to influencers in general. So they focus on Spotify playlists, but they're also like pitching it to Instagrammers and YouTubers and other people that might be interested in using cool music. So we'll probably have to do an episode of the podcast coming up, sort of our breakdown and experience and what we think artists should do. But the problem is every one of these services asks you, you know, describe the song, but give other artists that you sound like. And, you know, there's the artists that you may feel like as a whole, your catalog rolls up on, you know, up to like, we sound like these three artists. But that's when you're thinking about the catalog as a whole. When you're listening to a song individually, that's a totally different thing. And the genre you may classify it at might be totally different. And I ran into this last night. There's a song, one of the playlist services I saw had a bunch of playlists about sad songs. And so track 4 off our new album, I would consider, would fit that classification. It's a piano, just a piano, and it's the song's called Let Me Love You. You can listen to it when you're doing your 1,000 streams for Chris and myself. That's track 4. That song is just piano. I don't even play on it, and it's really mellow. And so if somebody just heard that song and that's all they knew of us, they would not classify us as what I would, as I think about us as our career and rolling everything up into, you know, how you would summarize our entire music catalog. So it's like, how do you classify all these songs and draw like, here's other artists we sound like for these tracks that may individually perform better when pitching to these influencers and playlist curators, when you can speak more directly about that specific track? And that's what I was running into that was really hard. Like, what are the other artists that sound like this song? Not sound like us, but sound like
this.
Yeah.
I had that same problem with the one with my new single that's going to come out next week, because it's way more rocking, louder, more aggressive than anything I've put out in a long time. So like, I kind of think of myself now as more like a singer-songwriter, folk Americana, maybe a little indie pop sort of thing. And this is, you know, in that light, this new song is totally out of the blue. So then I'm like scratching my head like, well, who are the kind of relevant, synthy, progressive, aggressive rock artists now that like bloggers are going to be? You know, because that's the other thing. You want to throw in like a current artist that shows that there's some hip value to this song. It's not just, you're not just citing like whatever the Rolling Stones and Radiohead or rock artists of yesteryear.
Yeah, it was exactly that. Rock artist of yesteryear. That's what I was struggling with for some of our tracks that I was pitching. Like, I don't want to keep using these references that, you know, are more general about us that are more famous people, but what are the artists that like that playlister might go, oh, I dig that other band that's been around for 2 years and these guys, okay, now I understand where they're coming from and give them context to hear our track. So that's something that's been difficult.
Particularly in that blogosphere light, like if your three Sounds Like artists are all from a long time ago, and in that world, like 5 years could be considered a long time ago, then, you know, it's a quick way to kind of paint your music as irrelevant in their eyes. I'm not saying that's valid. I don't think it's valid, but that's can be how a lot of those folks are thinking. I think I'm not one of them. I'm guessing.
Yeah, I have my opinions. I think that there's a lot of them that want to be tastemakers, but they don't really want to be a tastemaker because there's risk involved. They want to be follow-on tastemakers, basically just follow somebody else who really is a tastemaker. And so sometimes it feels like they're afraid to take a risk on a new track. Like they're waiting for someone to tell them it's good, as opposed to just knowing, oh, that's cool, I'm gonna feature that.
They really want to be first to be second.
Yep. That's what we all want to be, first to be second. No one wants to be first. That person gets beat up and abused and usually only gets notoriety after they're dead. So being second.
After they're dead, right. And all of their royalties or comfort or prestige or whatever they could have had has been squandered or stolen.
Yeah. And they're living in a van down by the river only to reach notoriety and make money for, you know, generations later. Yep. So being first to be second, I think that we should make a t-shirt. Yeah. Be first to be second. That's the new motto of the DIY Musician Podcast.
Speaking of, you were talking about your last item, things that yielded no results or that surprised you in the results they yielded. I got the last song I put out was on two playlists that I felt very lucky to be included on. One of them had 5,000 listeners and the other one had 30 something thousand listeners. So I was psyched. I was like, oh, cool. Well, this is going to yield me a bunch of plays. And, you know, obviously it did yield plays that I never would have gotten just amongst my current listeners. But I guess the surprise here is that Release Radar, the algorithmic playlist on one of the algorithmic playlists on Spotify, yielded more streams for me than both of those other playlists combined. So it just kind of points back to the power of getting followers on Spotify and, you know, trying to do those things that will get the attention of their algorithm.
Yeah. And for our release, this was the first release that we've had where on day one, Release Radar had some of our tracks in it. We also got picked up by that same Spotify playlist. We've been, you know, New Music Friday playlist that we've been getting featured in. But Release Radar picked up a bunch of tracks from the album. The only thing that's frustrating about it is it picks random tracks. And like, I know in your feed, your Release Radar, it featured...
It's just the one song.
Well, it was track 10 too. It was like the one track.
Oh, for your music.
Yeah. Because it pushed it to your Release Radar, one of our songs. And then in my Release Radar, it had a different song. None of them were ones that I would have said, feature this one, you know. But, you know...
Well,
the system's working at least.
Yeah, I wonder if Spotify will develop something like that at some point, but it leads me to a plug for Pandora Amp because they have the featured track feature where basically you can say, you know, for X amount of time, this is the one song I want you guys to be pushing to my listeners as much as possible. So you kind of get to put the emphasis on a specific single or hit or go through a sequence of those so that it's not just like what's happening with you where it's just random tracks being spread out.
Well, maybe in the future, these services will allow you in the distribution process to mark tracks in certain priorities so that when they get them, their algorithm knows or their system knows what tracks you think are going to be the ones that they should focus on.
Right.
I'll make a few calls. We'll see what we can do. But the last thing I'll mention is that we did a traditional small town poets publicity blitz in Nashville, which worked so well for us over the years, and especially way back in the day that helped us break the band originally. We call people, you know, we want to come play an acoustic set for your staff. You know, I mentioned that we've released a track to radio and we have a promoter working it, but you know, the stations that we stopped by in Nashville had the track, but weren't spinning it yet. And we also stopped by a publication, one of the big ones for our genre. And the interesting thing was, one of them, the publication, it's called CCM Magazine, we showed up thinking we were going to play for our the staff acoustically, and that'd be it. You know, we'd shake hands and just kind of remind them that we're here, get ourselves back on their radar. We show up, they had this whole mic set up with, you know, this backdrop of their stuff. If you follow us on Small Town Poets on Instagram, you'll see all of this. But they were like ready to go to capture a ton of content. They wanted to interview us. They wanted us to play songs. And I was like, whoa, this is a lot more than I expected. And they were highly engaged. And so that was one event. The other one was, what, like I said, one of those radio stations that wasn't playing our music. Back in the day, they used to play us all the time. And the emails back and forth about setting up stopping by were very transactional. Like, yeah, I mean, no one's hardly going to be here. It's a Friday, but you guys are welcome to come by. That was the tone. And so before we went in the building, I told the guys, I said, we had just come from that other place where it was just like exceeded our expectations like crazy. We were not expecting them to just capture so much content that they've been trickling out over the last week and have more that they're still trickling out. We get in there and yeah, there was only like seven of the staff there, but the guy who brought us in, I didn't realize he's the program director. I'm like, you're the program director, play our song. But he's like, before you guys play, I want to give the staff a history lesson. These guys were core artists for our station and blah, blah, blah. And so what happened was like far more positive than I expected. I thought it was going to be like us playing in the corner and a couple people pass through while warming up a bagel. So it's one of those things. The point I would say is that even if they sound lukewarm, if you're contacting somebody like, hey, can we stop by and play you guys a couple songs? If they leave an opening like, well, there's not going to be many people here, but you know, if you want to take it, you know, just unless they say no, you know, you might follow up and say, we'll be quick, we'll be in and out. If someone gives you the opportunity, take it, because once you're there, what happens may be a totally different experience. Like that whole staff at the radio station, all the places we went to, we're taking tons of video and tweeting and posting stuff. And I'm like, wow, I was not expecting this positive of a response based on the email interaction we had. So sometimes people can seem lukewarm, but once you get there, they're super excited. And it did exactly what we wanted it to.
Well, and maybe they're not even excited when you start playing. Maybe they are still lukewarm or indifferent, but as you're playing, maybe that's the opportunity they get excited. And they're like, oh, these guys are good. I'll actually listen.
Yeah. And the funny thing was afterwards, I was talking to the guy at that one radio station that brought us in, and I didn't realize he was the program director. You know, I was thanking him for bringing us in, and he's like, man, I really, really liked that first song. I said, oh, that's the radio single. And I asked him, what do you do here? And he's like, I'm the program director. I'm like, play the song. I didn't say it like that, but inside my head, I was screaming from the rooftops. If you like it, just behind that glass, you can just push play and everyone in this region will hear it and you'll be a hero. But anyway, so the like I said, the main point is those press opportunities might feel like, oh, they don't really want us, but can really yield some big results. I think it's important to get out, meet the people, let them see you're real people and you're good at what you do. And it softens you up for them. That one publication has been using that content and tweeting about us like crazy since it's been a week, and they've been posting multiple things about us every day. And
that's awesome.
And so it's like those things were not expected.
I just had three quick other things. I mentioned Pandora Amp. So the artist audio message is another good way to say, hey, I've got a new release, come check it out. And you know, you can change those as often as you like. Another thing I did is I gave out a free download of the song on cdbaby.com, which yielded really, really good results for me. I got a bunch of email addresses. You know, some customers on cdbaby.com can remain anonymous if they check a little box, but most people don't do that. So I got a bunch of emails from that, and I didn't want to just assume they want to be in my email list all of a sudden. So I made a separate list and I sent an email to them thanking them for downloading the song and putting a link to the video if they, you know, wanted to see more. And then I got almost a 50% open rate on that particular list mailing, which is great because my normal email list is usually like 25 to 35% is an average open rate. So yeah, that was giving away the song in that context did good stuff for me. And then lastly, I did a version of the lyric video without the words at all because I knew when it was shrunk down into an Instagram story, a lot of those words were going to be cut off anyways. So then I used a series of stories to do about 2 minutes of the video and just showed the animation portion of it.
Excellent.
And then we should also say, don't forget that now on Instagram stories, you can link to Spotify.
Yes, which I've been doing a ton. That's one thing that if you get a song featured in a playlist, especially like Release Radar, Discover Weekly, or any editorial playlist, go listen to the song there, have your fans and friends and whoever listen to the song in that playlist, and then you can share it to Instagram stories, and it's a real easy way to share it over and over again, and that kind of tells Spotify that, hey, people are sharing this. And, you know, it's also an easy way if you have friends that are on Instagram. To me, it felt less intrusive as asking people to share to their story than like putting it on Facebook, where Facebook, I don't know. It just felt like, yeah, just go share it there. If you know, it'll live there for 24 hours and it'll be gone. Then the next day you can do it again. So,
yeah. So that feature hasn't been really around long enough for me to, you know, remember to dive into any kind of data. How's it been working for you? Do you know?
Pretty decently. I've been looking at the data. I mean, it's been getting like, some of them have been getting like 600 views or whatnot. I'm pretty new to Instagram stories. I love Instagram. I've been using Instagram almost exclusively for a long time. But the stories things, one, I hate when people make me shoot video vertically. So I was a holdout on because on principle. But no, really been diving into Instagram stories, and there's some features and the way people have been using it. And now, you know, they're connected to Facebook, and it seems to be working. It's the clicks and things. I don't think they reveal the click data. They show how many people are looking at it. And our Instagram profile has been growing quite nicely lately. So I've been putting a lot of effort in trying to really keep stuff flowing through there. But it's a good one. Go to Spotify, and click share, and it gives you an Instagram story option. You got to make sure both apps are completely updated, though. If it's not there, you probably don't have the most recent version of Instagram or Spotify. All right, well, we'll have lots more to say. I mean, Chris and I are, you know, very much in the release and promotion process, and we just thought it'd be fun to compare some notes, talk about it on the podcast, maybe help spawn some ideas for those of you listening. And if you have some suggestions or tips, feel free to let us know. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209, or you can email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah, just, you know, people are, whenever, since we've been doing this podcast and both of us have really been releasing music lately, I've been hearing a lot of questions about, well, what are you doing? And are you doing what you say you tell other artists to do? And so just wanted to, you know, compare notes.
Sometimes.
Sometimes what?
Sometimes we're doing what we tell other artists to do.
Sometimes. Well, that's, you know what? That's what I like about this podcast, or I think makes this podcast have value. There are a lot of people out there that have good information that tell artists what to do, but they're not actually doing it themselves because they're not artists. And it's a big difference between being a armchair quarterback than actually being in the game and taking a few hits yourself and realizing, yeah, it's a whole different world when you're out there on the field and you're reacting to things, you're dealing with a lot of constraints and all that.
So we're the ones with the creative concussion.
That's right. We're going to have music CTE in a big way. So anyway, with that being said, we have a lot of calls. We've been hyping some listener feedback for a few episodes. We've got a lot of calls and emails, so we should get to them now. We're going to start off with a call. So here we go.
Hi, Kevin and CD Baby Podcast. This is John Madoff. I'm a band leader and a label owner in New York City. I love your show and listen a lot and take a lot of notes. And the information you guys are giving to DIY musicians is really invaluable. So thank you, first of all. And second of all, I'm wondering if you guys have any particular insights into recent updates in the Facebook algorithms and things like that that may help musicians, bands, labels do their promotion and getting out their stuff on Facebook, because it definitely seems like a lot less people are seeing what I post. And I know about boosting posts and things like that, but if there are any other kind of tips and tricks you can offer to get our music and other things out to a wider audience. Thanks again for the podcast, and keep up the great work. Bye.
All right, Chris, do you have any comments?
Well, it was a little soft, but he's wondering what are the tips on Facebook to get music to a wider audience?
Just with changes in their algorithm and things that they've been updating as of late.
Well, so I've been concentrating on this quite a bit lately as an area that I have a lot to learn about. And I would say the first thing is to get used to the idea that you're going to have to spend money. And that's okay. Facebook is a really powerful ad platform. And then once you know that, you have to think about if you're going to lower your cost, per impression or per like or whatever your goal is per video view, you need to do quite a bit of it in order to teach Facebook how to optimize on your behalf. And there's courses out there you could check out. There's tons of YouTube views, but I think testing a bunch of different audiences against one another, maybe your music sounds like Mozart, but maybe it also sounds like Dr. Dre. And so you want to create some ad audiences that appeal to both of those and test them against each other, but not just two audiences. I'd say go for, a bunch. Try to test 10 against each other and test different ads within those. And then over the course of a few days, you'll have the results you need to optimize for a particular campaign. And then furthermore, as you do more campaigns over the long term, all of that information is not just helping you, but is helping Facebook help you. So that's kind of that's sort of a bird's eye answer, but.
Yeah, a basic rule of thumb as far as like what will probably get seen to more of my Facebook followers, what kind of content will have a better chance of reaching a broader audience is things that keep people in Facebook will always trump things that cause them to leave. So if you've got a video, post it directly to Facebook. If you post a YouTube link, they're not going to show it to as many people. Live streaming is sort of like the one that wins out above all. If you live stream something, they instantly start showing it to a lot of people and then will promote it to a lot of people who are online even after the live stream's over.
And all of that live stream content that is archived can also be used as assets that you use in your Facebook advertising later.
Yeah, correct. Comments or a nice note that you write with a photo that keeps people in Facebook will perform much better than a link to somewhere else. So that's something to keep in mind. And then, trying to make sure that you're getting people to share, to like, all those kind of things, those interactions tell Facebook that this is something worth showing. They're making changes to the algorithm all the time. So it's really hard to say, do this, don't do that. But those are some basics that should help.
Well, and I think a general rule of thumb, not just on Facebook, but anytime you're doing any kind of campaign that's important, is you want to get an early burst of enthusiasm from like a core group of followers or fans or friends. Like, so if you post, let's say you post a new video on Facebook, you should communicate in advance with, 10 of your best friends and say, hey, it would really help me if, as soon as I post this, you like it, comment, share, tag some friends, whatever it is, or all of those things. So they're kind of ready to go, and it gives that piece of content an extra kick.
This video I posted on Facebook yesterday, it's a a music video of behind the scenes footage from us in the recording studio. When I posted it to Facebook, I had everybody in the band share it, you know, like, go share this to your feed right now. And so it sees a lot of quick shares. And then, you know, people that may be friends with us on Facebook, but may not follow the band page or sharing and liking it. So it gives it some legs. So that should help. All right, let's move on to the next call.
Hey, Kevin. Hey, Chris. This is Tori Knight again. Been a minute since I called. Just wanted to really have something to say. So I have a question and a comment. The comment is about the phones at venues and how, you know, you know what I'm talking about. Anyway, my comment is I get why Prince, who's my number one favorite artist, why he didn't want the phones at the shows, and even to a certain extent, why Jack White would want that. But we live in a new era, and the era is phones, and so I think it's going to be almost impossible to stop that, you know. But maybe a solution is, well, like the first three or four rows, when people are buying tickets and they get tickets for those rows, like it says, you will not be able to use a cell phone in this row. Your phone will be in such and such a pouch. Are you okay with that? Because, you know, as an artist, after the third or fourth row, you don't see you there anyway. But, you know, and so that wouldn't be a distraction. But then everybody else behind you, behind those rows, could actually use their phones. So, or another thing, I think you kind of mentioned this, is just having the artist kind of, you know, in a nice way saying, hey, you know, could you, it's kind of distracting with the phones on the whole time, but I am actually going to give you a moment to bring out your phones and have a cool video, whatever you want to do on that video. And I will actually interact with, you know, as much as I can with you on that. Anyway, you get it. Now my question, as a solo artist now who has played with a number of bands and stuff, how much information from the other bands should I use to promote myself now? And I have nothing to do with those bands anymore. How much should I use? I am a award-winning musician to one of the bands, so I use that. But with other stuff, like, yeah, I hope that makes sense. Anyway, the show is amazing. I wish I could come to the conference this year, but I am not going to be able to make it. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Do you have any comments or responses to his phone statement or his question?
No, I mean, I know we've gone back and forth about the phone thing, and there's merits to both kind of extremes, but I think he's right in that phones are just part of our reality now, and fighting it too much is a losing battle. So yeah, I mean, a creative way to kind of bridge the extremes sounds okay, worth trying. And then I'm forgetting, what was the question? Should he use his older music that was from previous bands? Depends on what context, I guess. Like, did you understand how he was planning to use it?
Not really, but, you know, I would agree it depends on what context. The way I would typically look at it is probably, if I'm been in a band and maybe got some fans, but then started a solo career, I think it's probably perfectly acceptable to reach back into those band songs and play a few just to keep the fans that have come along for the ride, you know, interested, and to, you know, pay tribute to what has come before. But if you've been a solo artist and now you're in a band playing some of that other stuff, I don't know. It's probably a case by case basis. I think you don't want to confuse your fans. And at the same time, it's okay to celebrate your entire catalog.
Yeah, I agree with that. So like for me, I'm a solo artist now, but I have band material from yesteryear that I still leave up on my site when I'm posting, you know, whatever Spotify players or any kind of discography. I include that band album because I'm really proud of it, and they're still my songs and my voice, so it's not that big a departure, I guess. I wouldn't be using it necessarily if I were trying to book myself a gig or get press or anything, because it's not only is it old, but it's a different musical context.
Yeah, agreed. All right, Thanks for the call. We've got more, so we're going to keep it rolling.
Hey, guys. This is Bree Noble from the Women of Substance Radio podcast. And you can find us at www.wosradio.com. I just wanted to comment on your last episode about five ways to ruin your press. I really love number five as somebody that received a ton of submissions. And, you know, my goal is to promote indie artists. Just the thank you is such a big deal to people like me, because some of what we do, a lot of what we do is a thankless job. You know, we're working in the background. Artists don't see all the admin and, you know, all the time that it takes to review music and the time that we spend promoting our shows to make sure that people find out about the artists that we play. So I just wanted to say that the artists that thank me personally, whether it's on social media or send me an email, it makes a big difference to me. And, you know, when I see their music next time, probably subliminally, I'm a lot more likely to choose their music. So just thank you for calling that out. And thanks to all the artists that have been appreciative to press. We really appreciate it. Thanks so much, guys.
Well, there you have it. A testimonial that saying thank you really works. Thanks for the call, Bree. And that was one thing after that little publicity blitz we just did in Nashville. I was following up with the guys and we're like, we got to send thank you notes. So
are they, do they need much convincing, or are they like, oh yeah, great idea, let's do it?
No, we all want to do it. It's just one of those things you got to remember to do. And it's like, you just came off of this really busy trip and now you want to be more busy, or now you're trying to, you know, tie up all the loose ends and you're like, ah, I'm done being busy. But anyway, there's an easy app. There's several out there in the app store, but the one that I believe we used is called Felt, F-E-L-T. And it's real easy. It makes this nice printed card. You can put in a photo or you can use their templates. You can type in a message or you can write with your finger, which was a disastrous attempt for me, trying to. But anyway, you can do that. And then it mails it to them and you're done. So it makes it super easy. And, you know, what we did is we took photos with all the people of all the places we stopped. So you drop a picture from your stop at that event with the people there. You write a nice note and you send it to them, and it does pay dividends. And even if it doesn't pay dividends, it's just being a good person, a good human being. And we need more of that in the world. Yeah,
but what's that worth, though? What do I get for being good?
The satisfaction that you're not one of the bad people.
Oh, okay.
All right, we'll take a break from calls and get to some emails. But we still got some more calls. So it's action-packed episode today. Hey there, it's Brandon from the punk metal band American Standards out of Phoenix, Arizona. I had a couple quick questions for either the podcast or offline. Does CD Baby submit all artists to Touch Tunes? And I'll answer that real quick. No, not all artists, but there is information about that on our help center. So go check it out and you can see what music they take. Does CD Baby pitch artists to any playlist? If not, is there services that you partner with or would recommend? And I'll answer that one real quick. We do not pitch to playlists currently. And Chris and I have been trying out some services, like we said, and we will report back once we have tried more of them. American Standard just released a new song titled Weep through CD Baby Pro on May 18th, 2018. The music video was uploaded to a popular YouTube channel for metal bands. Premiered through Decibel Magazine and Reddit, did a sponsored AMA for us on the day of the release. This translated to several video views on YouTube and sales on our Bandcamp, which has always seemed to be our most popular platform. But I have yet to find out how to translate these numbers to any real success on Spotify. Despite several smaller playlist ads and our focus on pushing Spotify, we're still at about a fourth of what we're doing on Bandcamp. Thank you in advance and have a good one, Brandon.
I was having a conversation about this with, I'm forgetting who it is now at Music Biz when we were there last week. I think it might have been Jonathan from Pandora, but we were talking about the genre-specific nature of all these different platforms and how, you know, piano, solo piano music does so well on Pandora. And we specifically, whoever I was talking about this with, we specifically said metal doesn't do that well on Spotify.
Interesting.
And, you know, I don't know, taking that for what it's worth, I haven't seen data, but I kind of trusted them in their analysis. So maybe that's just not the platform for your music if it's hard rock or metal.
Yeah, and that's one of those things, like I mentioned earlier in this episode, where your fans may not be where you want them to be. And it's kind of this thing of like, do I do the work to try and get them over to the right platform? Or do I have to realize that I need to focus on a different platform? Yeah, the buzz is about Spotify, but if your fans are all on Pandora or Amazon, maybe you dive in and be an expert on how people are interacting with music on those platforms. And maybe that's to the benefit of your music in, you know, even though everyone's not talking about that platform yet. There is some genre nature, like EDM is huge on SoundCloud. I think you just have to do the assessment. Is this where the genre is at? Or is this something where my fans just aren't where I want them to be and maybe I need to cater to my fans more? I don't know. That's interesting. I wouldn't have expected that with metal, but it, you know.
I'm always reluctant to embrace the idea that you need to evangelize a platform to your audience. Like, that's, well, A, it's kind of annoying, I think, to them. They want to hear about your music, not what platform you want them to use or to switch to or whatever. You're also kind of doing that company's work for them. Like, if metal fans don't want to be on Spotify for whatever reason, then fine, go where they are and forget about it.
Well, I will say I agree with you, but...
No, don't forget entirely, certain, but just...
Yeah, you don't want but to certain platforms... Go ahead.
Well, no, you don't want to have them kicking and screaming.
No, no, no. I think the challenge is that certain platforms are doing more to amplify activity and push music to more users, and artists want to take advantage of that, where others aren't. So my neighbor, who when he saw this press that was happening around a release that was posting on Facebook, he's like, man, you've been blowing up my Facebook feed. Sounds like it's going all right. And he's like, I'm like, yeah. He's like, I like the music. I checked it out. I'm like, cool. And they said, I need to get the album. I'm like, well, do you use Spotify? I was like, yeah, but I need to help you out. I'm gonna buy the CD. And I was like, part of me was like, yeah, but I'm thankful for the money. But when you buy that CD, whether you listen to it a million times or never, all that transaction just basically ended right there. Where if he went to Spotify and streamed it all day while he was at work, Spotify would say, oh, people really like this. Let's show it to more people. And to me, building an audience is more important than making money at this point. That's where the tension comes in, I will say, of trying to get your fans to where it helps you the most. And what that might mean for you could be different for somebody else.
Yeah. If it's an easy sell, go for it. But if it's, you know, if it's a fight, forget about it.
Agreed. Agreed. There's ways to highlight things like playlists that are featuring your music or posting links and things like that. But yeah, you definitely don't want to be fighting a battle against your fans. If they all want CDs, go get CDs made and sell them CDs. That's the thing. Right. We've got more. Kevin and Chris. Hello, gentlemen. Question for you. What do you recommend as an incentive reward for people signing up for a music email list? Email list is certainly among the best tools for music marketing. And I've been offering a free MP3 download of a special solo acoustic album, but given that I use Spotify or other digital means or vinyl or nearly all of the music that I personally listen to, I wonder how much of an incentive a download is anymore. Your thoughts, Matt Wheeler. Matt's a friend of the podcast, and I'm assuming Matt will be at the conference in August. He's been, I think, at all of them so far.
I think he has, yeah. The value of a download is it's good for annoying people. Good for making people do work.
Well, here's the thing. And I'd be curious what anyone listening, if they're doing something that's working to get people on the email list. Because I've been trying to figure this one out myself lately. Is like, that's another thing I'm trying to tackle, how to build up our list and start, you know, at least outpacing the unsubscribes. That's all I want to do is outpace the unsubscribe.
Hey, we're at a nice healthy plateau. We lose as many as we gain every week.
That's right. That's right. It doesn't kick us back into the next payment tier on MailChimp. So we're good. So I've been trying to figure that out. What gets people motivated to get on the list? And I'd be curious on people's thoughts. I know that I will say, music aside from just marketing in general, what we do here at CD Baby, whatever the freebie is, most people never really use it. If it's a free guide or a free download of this or that, most people never actually do anything with it. So it may not matter. It may be fine that it's an MP3 and it's still like, ooh, I get access. And that's what you're really selling. Free access to something that nobody else can get.
Well, I think if you can communicate in some sort of short way the value of being on the list, for me personally, that's going to do way more for me than any promise of something I have to download, especially if it's an MP3. I'm never going to listen to it. I'm probably going to, you know what I mean? If I won't even download it.
Yeah.
Whereas just the simple communication of the benefit of being on the list, what experience am I going to get from it? What will I learn? That's kind of why I join people's email lists.
What are some of those benefits that sell you on getting on someone's list?
Well, the most recent one I joined was not a music thing. It was a guy who does like nutrition and sleep study stuff. And that was just simply like, health tips and nutritional advice. For some reason, the way he was explaining it, I was interested. So I was like, yeah, I'll subscribe to that. I knew what I was going to get. I don't know. Maybe
going back a couple episodes to where I interviewed Cheryl Engelhardt about 30 emails to make, maybe somehow you wrap that up into, you're going to get this experience that happens sequentially over the next year of your life that's going to make you a diehard fan.
Yeah. Well, and also I'm realizing now for musicians, the people I end up subscribing to their list, it's because someone has told me, oh, their list is awesome. I'm like, well, what makes their email list so awesome? They're just musicians touring around. And then there's always some, oh, well, they're really funny, or, oh, they have these really deep stories. There's always some emotional or entertainment element to it besides simply news. It's not just I got a new song or whatever. And then usually it's the word of mouth that I hear and then I go and subscribe. So that's an entirely unhelpful bit of advice, but.
Well, that's where we need people to weigh in. That's what I want to know. How are you getting people on your list? This is for me. This isn't just because I want you to randomly call in and this is a good thing to comment on. I want to know. Tell me what to do so Chris and I can solve this problem. All right, Matt. Sorry we weren't more help. Let's see. We got one more email, then we'll round out the calls. Can I release an album song by song over a specific period of time? Like one new song every 2 weeks in the order of tracks on the album. And when it's done, it automatically is grouped like an album of 10 songs on Spotify and other streaming platforms, as if I released it like an album on purpose. I think this hybrid single album release would be perfect for modern times. And he asked to answer it on the podcast. I'm a big fan and you guys have motivated me to use CD Baby. Our job is done here. You can find my music under Local Teen. And feel free to play a song as bumper intro to this segment. And I think his name was Lawrence. That's what the email thing said, but didn't sign his name. Sign your name, people. It's not a text message. So I'm gonna call him Lawrence. Lawrence, no, that can't be done. And I don't know if it ever will be done. Basically, there's a lot of information that goes along with each song that categorizes it so you can get paid. It has a UPC, which is a unique identifier, and it has an ISRC code, which is also a unique identifier. So every single will have that UPC code, but every album has its own UPC code. So there's all these things that the industry has used to be able to track product and make sure that payment and money and information flow properly. So all that would have to change if you released singles. Somebody would have to roll it all up and then discard all that previous information and put it under new information. It's just not going to happen. The more I talk about it, the more I'm like, no, this isn't going to happen ever. It sounds nice, but I would rather just release the singles and then put the album out and make sure I got paid than do something that's really stresses the way the systems have worked in order to make sure you get paid and credited for sales and streams. So, sorry.
Crushing dreams.
We're crushing dreams. That's what we do here on the podcast. All right. Let's move on. Another call.
Hi, guys. Just wanted to say I love your podcast. I've listened to all of them. I was just finishing listening to 207. My name's Ron Valencia from Breaking 12, breaking12.com. In your episode 207, you talk about press releases and what not to do. One thing I would have thrown in there is that if you're meeting somebody for the first time, you know, especially like a podcast or something like that, it would be good to have with you, if you're meeting in person, a list of some key talking points that would be really helpful for the interviewer so they can ask the right questions. Like maybe they're new at what their job is, and you mentioned that kind of thing in the podcast. But I think it's important to have some kind of communication before you meet. If it's a blog thing, send them just brief little bullet points so they can just read a few little things, you know, where you're from, what you do, something that's interesting about your group or your band. Anyway, I just want to throw that out there. Again, Ron Valencia from Breaking 12. Hope you guys have a good one. Take it easy. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ron. And yes, that is a good idea. Yeah. And you should do it. And I did in those press opportunities, I was talking about those local press ones. I sent this nice press release and some information, and it was clear they did not read it. So you can do a lot, but you still need to be prepared because you can't force people to read or listen.
It seemed like he was suggesting, though, that it actually be a printed out thing and that when you're face to face, you could hand it to them and they would have a reference point for where to begin if they're kind of starting cold and clueless.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen people send like, here's some, I think we may have had a standard form that our management back in the day was sending out. Like, here's some common bullet points the guys talk about. And it was some things that might be more of interest, not just the typical, what they might think of anyway. So yeah, that's good to have and be able to send along. What are the things you want people to ask you? It's okay to communicate that ahead of time and it just helps them out. So whatever you can do to prepare for more success with that press interaction. So, all right, next call.
Hey there, Kevin and Chris. This is Andrew. I'm a singer-songwriter currently based in Minnesota. Love the podcast. Two questions. The first one is, what is the best way to reach fans on your mailing list? I currently use MailChimp, but I tend to only get a little over 50% open rates, which I find kind of disappointing that there's, you know, another half of your fans who have signed up to receive your emails and who are not receiving them or opening them for whatever reason. It's going to their spam filter or whatever. I'm just wondering, is there a better method to reach fans who are on your mailing list? I'm even wondering, you know, sending out from your own Hotmail account or Gmail account or whatever, and even sending them one by one if more fans would end up opening the emails. So there's the first question. Second question is about show.co, which you guys have been discussing recently. For example, asking your fans to follow you on Spotify or leave their email address before unlocking my new video or new content for them. And I totally get the upside of doing this. But I kind of feel like I'm holding my fans hostage a bit by denying them new content or whatever unless they follow me or pass along their email address. So as much as I'd love to promote my Spotify and gather email addresses, I feel a bit weird about going about things in that way. And I really want to treat my fans like gold. So I'm just wondering if you can please discuss this a little bit more and provide some perspective on this topic. Thank you very much, and keep up the great work. Bye.
All right. Well, I'll address the first little thing he said about email list open rate. Above 50%, that is a monstrous open rate.
Great.
That is like so far beyond the normal. A extremely good open rate is the like 25% range. But MailChimp has like some averages for industries that you can look at. The average for like the entertainment industry, I think it has it at like 16%. So 50%, you're not going to get better
don't change.
Than that. It's just the weird thing about marketing. You'll see that, yes, all these people are on your list. Some of them missed it because they're busy. Their inbox is full. They don't care. They weren't interested at the moment. Then some will open it. But then the click-through rate is much lower. So why aren't they clicking if they opened it? And then the people that click through on the buy link, they don't buy or stream. And what's that about? It's just what happens in marketing. We deal with it every day. So that is a really good open rate. But as far as show.co, Chris, you may want to comment on that.
So I understand the concern for sure, especially as you said at the end, you want to treat your fans like gold. So you don't want to keep feeling like you're milking them for something. But show.co also lets you do things that are kind of opportunities for both you and your fans. Like, for instance, you can feature a YouTube video in a nice landing page. It's a clean experience. It's a way better, more, you know, as I said, with my video earlier, it can be in a more emotional experience. That's a benefit to your fan, and you're not asking them to do anything that you wouldn't be if you just sent them to YouTube. It's, you know, they're just clicking a link and they're going to watch a video. You're not asking for anything in return for that. But even in cases where you are asking for something in return, it doesn't always necessarily have to be so transactional in that way or in that negative way. For instance, it could be that you want them to pre-save the song, which first of all is an opportunity for them because then you're guaranteeing them to be the first to hear the official release of the song. But even go a step further, and if they take that action, reward them right now by giving them something else, even if it's hear that same track right now on SoundCloud or something like that. So it doesn't always have to be that you're taking advantage of them in some way. It's hopefully it's something where you're both gaining something from the exchange. And I guess the third thing I would say is I think your fans probably know that in order for you to do well, to some degree, you have to be asking things of them, promoting yourself in certain ways. And if they like you and they respect your music, they'll be okay with that and along for the ride to some degree, you know, as long as it's not egregious. But it sounds like you're already very sensitive to seeming like you're taking advantage of them. So I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah, I think there's one thing to note is that sometimes people really like feeling like they're getting exclusive content. And so you can use those feelings that people have about getting access that nobody else has to your advantage. And it's not taking advantage of them. It's like people like it. They like feeling like, oh, this, I only got to see that. Not everybody got to see that. I'm one of the lucky ones. So you don't want to get too sensitive. It sounds like you're probably not even approaching the line if you're already feeling sensitive about it. There are people that cross the line and it just feels like they're just trying to beat people up to get something from them. Everything in moderation.
I agree.
Your fans want to support you. You need to ask for email addresses to keep them on the list and you know, more engaged. And chances are, if they're converting, it's working because they don't mind it and they like what they're getting.
That's yeah, and I guess my last thought on that is, if you already have a situation set up with your followers like Patreon, where they are already contributing at some level and you've kind of promised that those are the people that will get everything first, then of course, don't ask them for anything else beyond that, like monetarily or transactionally, if you feel like it's putting them out because you've already kind of established that patronage thing. But outside of that, I think your fans are okay taking additional actions in order to get that access.
Exactly. All right, we've got one last call, and here it is.
Hey guys, this is Josh. Love the show. I have a question for you guys. So I know a lot of people upload their music videos on YouTube, and I know Facebook is also a big video platform as well. So I'm wondering, should I upload, you know, a music video to get exposure on YouTube and Facebook, or should I just concentrate on Facebook since it's a lot easier to share? And I know the Facebook algorithm doesn't like YouTube videos, so you know, I'm just thinking about would it be easier just to upload it on Facebook and have everybody share that link versus giving them a YouTube link and sharing that. So if you guys have any advice on that, I'd greatly appreciate it. All right. Thanks, guys. Bye.
My advice is if your goal is to get people to share it, that you're probably going to see that happen more on Facebook. You can put the video in both places. If you don't have a YouTube profile and it's just like you've got maybe one or two random videos thrown there, I mean, you might as well put it on YouTube, but I wouldn't send people there unless, you know, it also depends on what kind of video it is we're talking about. But if you just have this video and you think, hey, I think our fans will like this video, I would definitely post it directly to Facebook. And then depending on what it is, if it's something that's more, you know, evergreen that I want to be around for a while, I would also post it on my YouTube channel and figure out how best to use that there. It may be that you just park it there for now. If you want to do a video premiere, I think using YouTube with a tool like show.co is more beneficial and has some benefits in that way. But what I did with our band in the video we just posted is I did it every place at once, and it was kind of this big explosion that happened. It was on, I emailed out everybody and it went to a show.co page with the YouTube video embedded. I put it on Facebook. I put it on Instagram. I put it on Instagram stories. And so all at once, it was clear that we just put this video. So it just was like an explosion of everywhere at the same time. And that sort of, I think, reinforced with everybody that maybe saw it a couple places, oh, I should probably check this out.
I agree with everything you just said.
Chris, perfect. What a great way to end the podcast.
Oh, that's our last call? Well, then I disagree with every... No.
So, yeah, that was our last call. Thanks, everybody, for the calls and emails. You can call our listener line at 360-524-2209 or email us at podcast@cdbabypodcast.com. And there's the comment section at the podcast website, cdbabypodcast.com. And yeah, any final words?
Yeah, don't forget to stream our music and then don't forget to like it.
That's right.
I don't mean like pressing a button that says like. I mean letting it into your heart and being moved by it.
Oh, we're still allowed to do that? I thought...
if you can spare, you know...
Spare some...
Four minutes.
Yeah, so we'll put every listener down for at least 1,000 streams each. That's the repayment for 11 years of podcasting. So that's all we ask. We don't want your money. We just want your time and your heart and your ears.
It's really just, that just comes down to what? 5 streams per episode that we've done.
So that's Chris Robley and Small Town Poets. Not together. It's not Chris Robley and Small Town Poets. I don't want to confuse anybody anymore.
That's a future collab.
A reminder, DIYMusicianCon.com. Go there to get your conference tickets so we can hang in Nashville. You know, Chris and I are a good hang. I would say we're fun. Yeah. We're not terrible.
I think. I hope. You know who would be able to tell us that is Damon Grant, because he has a whole blog post that says like the key to being professional hired gun musician is to be a good hang.
And that is absolutely true. That is why I got the gig with Small Town Poets in the first place. They had a guitar player subbing in that was far better than me, and they did not enjoy being on the bus with him. And I was a good hang.
So
the show is only about, you know, not even a tenth of your day. It's like a fifth of your day. The rest is just having to be around this person.
Tolerate them, yeah. So.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. We will catch you next time.
See ya. We'll be right back.
You've been listening to the CD Baby DIY Musician Podcast, broadcasting from Portland, Oregon, USA.